Welcome, everyone. This is All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast 224, recording this on the 26th of July, 2017, and slightly infamous date, which I shall refer to in a moment. But in the meantime, I'm Steve Litchfield. I have with me Mr. Rafe Blanford.
Hello, everybody. Yes, great to be back on the podcast. Steve had his guest last week while I was away on holiday. Thanks very much for that. And yes, talking through our usual range of topics, there's been some great editorials on the site, so I'm keen to dissect those as usual, and I'm sure we'll have our ramblings as well.
Okay, well, just to refer to that date, to say 26th of July 2017 was supposed to be the shipping date for the Alcatel Idol 4 Pro, certainly in the UK, and I've gone ahead and ordered one and bought one, and I was expecting it to be shipped, and nothing at all because it's been delayed by a fortnight. Now, I think it's shipping in Germany in the next couple of days. It hasn't been delayed quite so much, and we saw the very first leak of this Alcatel Idol 4 Pro, Rafe, on a German website. So I'm not at all surprised to see that the Germans get it first. I think Amazon.de does tend to get a lot of tech products first for some reason. Maybe it's just logistics of Amazon. The Idol 4 Pro, I was hoping to give you the first sort of a hands-on and my review and where it fits into the 2017 smartphone world this week and next week, Rafe, but it may have to be delayed just slightly.
Yes, it's a shame that, but I'm guessing that you'll give us the full rundown in a fortnight. It is interesting. I guess we're going to touch on this in the later story because of the kind of specifications. It's going to kind of take over in one sense as the best flagship you can buy sort of on paper, but we're very keen to see how it actually performs in the real world. So we'll just have to wait a little bit. As I say, it's a really interesting device to talk about. I suspect this could just be a logistics chain thing. I mean, given that the device in one sense has been available elsewhere, I think this is probably just one of those things that sometimes happens. Steve, I suspect that you're probably one of the handful of people waiting with bated breath to get this into their hands. It's probably not as big a launch as some other devices we might talk about in the mobile world. Nonetheless, a bit frustrating, but of course we will be covering it in full detail. I guess that'll be around the second week of August.
Yes, if you look at this objectively, you could say, well, the Idol 4 Pro is outgunned by the Elite X3 in the sense that although the chipset and the RAM and so forth is the same, the X3 has got the extra gadgets, not least the pogo pins on the back and the full waterproofing and so forth. But the Idol 4 Pro, a.k.a. whatever it was, the Idol 4S with the Windows 10 in the States, does have a really nice build, a really nice feel in the hand, metal and glass, very, very 2017. And it has my favourite feature on smartphones, which, as you all know, is the really nice, loud, high-quality stereo front-facing speakers. And that's the first time we've really had that on Windows 10 Mobile or Windows Phone. The X3 from HP claimed that with, quote, Bang & Olufsen branding, and it was a complete fiasco, and they're pretty tinny and weedy, and I was very, very disappointed. Hopefully, Alcatel has got a good track record here with the JBL brand on their speakers. Hopefully this will at last be a Windows 10 mobile phone with a decent chipset, really fast. It'll actually have active support because this will be a new device and we'll need 2 years of active support from Alcatel and Microsoft with the great speakers and with not too bad a camera. I mean, Anthony Fear's been trying it out and reviewing it up on the site in the American guys. I'm hoping that they've put extra improvements then. Of course, I'll do my usual full Steve Litchfield camera analysis as time goes on. But I am genuinely looking forward to this. I know most of our listeners and readers don't care that much. There hasn't been that much comment activity. But I, for one, I do genuinely have bated breath.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, as you say, the kind of specs on paper are the same. And I guess I probably should have made it clearer that I consider this sort of more targeted at the consumer market. I mean, the irony that Windows 10 Mobile and the way Microsoft is doing things is far more enterprise focused. But you spoke about the speakers there, but also just the fact that Alcatel is more of a consumer facing brand. I mean, HP, of course, big well-known brand, but it's not something you really typically associate with consumer smartphones, where Alcatel, I think it's fair to say, has built up quite a strong reputation now in the smartphone market for good value smartphone devices. I mean, actually, maybe not so much at the flagship end, but certainly in the mid-tier. And of course, this is coming out of, I mean, Alcatel, originally a French company, and in that sense, it's a French brand, but since taken over by TCL, a Chinese manufacturer. But in one sense, they've been one of the most successful of those Chinese companies producing phones for a Western audience. And by that, I kind of mean Europe and the States. Because of course, you know, there's been some really, really very successful smartphone brands directly in China, you know, not least of all, Lenovo, Xiaomi, and a whole bunch of others. In fact, and Huawei is probably the best known of them. And then actually Huawei's kind of launched its Honor brand and has started to push the Huawei brand as well. But Alcatel and Huawei are probably those big two Chinese brands as far as Western smartphone consumers are concerned. And so that makes it interesting for me. And as you say, they've had a pretty good track record on hardware, and not just on speakers, in the camera as well, and the quality of the components. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, how this works. And, you know, the big question always with the Windows devices is kind of how well integrated is the hardware into the software. We've kind of had poor experience with kind of the less busy Windows manufacturers in the past. It always used to be, we'd say, you know, go for a Nokia or Microsoft device because they spent more time integrating the hardware and the software. Things have been better in HP, despite kind of early stumbles have been better. So it'll be really interesting to see that. Of course, Alcatel do have a bit of history in the Windows world. So I'm pretty optimistic on that front as well. But I look forward to seeing the full Steve Litchfield treatment.
Yeah, this TCL reference design, branded at Alcatel in most cases in Europe and in the States. I mean, it's also used, for example, by BlackBerry, who branded the DTEC 60. And that's a full £480 for the exact same hardware, literally the exact same hardware, £480, £60 more. So I know that has some extra BlackBerry software, but hey, this has got Windows 10 Mobile, which is even better. No, it depends on your taste, obviously. That's an Android handset. But it shows that we're in the right sort of ballpark. And as I said to last week's guest, Jason Snowden, I genuinely don't think £420 is too outrageous, and especially at this time stage in the game where we're talking about Windows 10 Mobile, Windows Phone enthusiasts who basically haven't got that much competition. So we're not looking at a competitive landscape. Alcatel could probably have charged £450 and got away with it, maybe even more. So I think £420 is quite reasonable, and I was very happy to put my own money down, Rafe. I still haven't made up my mind really whether I'll keep it long term. I think it really depends on just how good those speakers are and just how good the camera is, and I'm optimistic on both counts.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see. I mean, I guess we should be clear here that actually TCL has taken on a whole bunch of these brands, which BlackBerry is the latest, and Alcatel, and you know, they're being quite canny in the way they're producing all these smartphones. As you, I think reference design is absolutely the right way to refer to it, because it's kind of common innards and to a certain extent some common materials on the outside as well, and sort of then using brand and a little bit of custom software as well, or I guess you could say lots of custom software in the case of this Windows version, to kind of offer consumers a different experience. And it's interesting to my mind, because it always, we always used to get really excited about new hardware releases, but more recently it absolutely has become commoditized. But of course, for the Windows world, this is exciting because it is a new piece of hardware. It's not something we've seen for a while, and of course it isn't a copy of another Windows device. It's a copy of a Android device. But it's also interesting that things have standardized to the extent, or commoditized to the extent, that this is a realistic strategy and actually still results in what to my mind seems like good hardware. I mean, obviously we're kind of gonna have to wait and see a little bit on that, but it just reminds me how much things have changed, and actually how much difficulty the kind of traditional manufacturers have had kind of addressing this world. And of course, you have got the Samsungs and the Apples of this world, you know, doing really well, producing kind of flagship devices with real character, more in the traditional mold. But you referred to the pricing there. You know, those devices, especially given recent UK foreign exchange rate changes, are definitely near a £600 at plus pounds. So we're talking something that takes 25%, a little bit more, off that cost in the Alcatel 4 Pro. And I mean, they're not identical, but they are certainly at the upper end of the smartphones. And actually, it's kind of worth reminding ourselves that while the likes of the S8 and the iPhone, and you know, get all the attention in the media, actually a lot of people still buying phones at the moment are on the kind of devices just off the top tier. Either they're keeping their old ones a bit longer, or they're being canny about what they buy, particularly in the Android world. We've seen a lot of that recently, kind of this rise of mid-tier devices, and I mean, in this case, we're talking more certainly upper mid-tier or lower high-end, depending on how you phrase it. But to me, that's interesting because actually that's the experience that a lot of people have for their smartphones. And we've talked about this time and time again, Steve, that actually it's almost like there is that still that cachet buying a high-end smartphone. But, you know, you can knock a couple of hundred pounds off and still get 95% of the functionality and probably more than that now.
Yeah.
And even, you know, reducing it by half, you still get 90%, a lot of the functionality. And that's a big contrast to even just 3 or 4 years ago where there was a noticeable difference in the tiering. And now it's far more about kind of the branding or maybe kind of a little bit of quality or type of specification you're getting. But I would argue that the experience of using a phone, particularly if you're not really, really demanding or not pushing it, actually, you know, the value equation has changed totally. And in one sense, the Alcatel Idol 4 Pro tells this story perfectly in the Windows world, yeah. Something we haven't seen before, basically, because we haven't seen that much in the way of new hardware. But it's a story that applies across the smartphone space.
Absolutely. And that mid-range really is, I think that's the most exciting for me because I'm very well aware of value for money. And those Samsungs you mentioned, and the new iPhone, for example, is rumoured to be over £1,000, the new iPhone 8, whatever you call it. And we're looking at the Samsung Galaxy Note 8, I think it's fair to say. That's also going to be in the £1,000-plus range, which is crazy money, really, for a phone. I know it's extreme high-tech, but only really the enthusiasts and the people buying it on heavy contracts will be getting those devices. The really exciting place for me is that mid-range where you've got the Idol 4S in the Android world and now the 4 Pro in Windows 10 Mobile. You've got the ZTE Axon 7. I've got an Axon 7 here. I've been really happy with it. It's about a £350 phone, but amazing speakers. Again, a Snapdragon 820. Again, the 4 gig of RAM. All of these devices have similar specs. They absolutely fly. And yet they don't cost the earth. The Honor 9, I was reviewing that recently up on the phone show. Again, under £400, yet absolutely flies, can cope with, I would say, 99% of what you throw at it compared to a Samsung Galaxy S8, which makes the S8 and similar devices, the pricing, seem absolutely crazy. I know you're buying slightly better design, you're getting a slightly, quote, better branding, maybe you're getting a slightly faster processor, a slightly better camera, but those devices I've just mentioned, 350, 380, and quite often you can find them nearer 300 on offer. Just it makes it a totally, totally different value proposition, and I can't sort of emphasize the importance of this mid-range, which is where most of the mainstream are, especially people who haven't got, you know, big business contracts as soaking up all the expenses.
That's right, and of course the contracts in some ways a bit misleading, especially now. In most markets, including the UK, that kind of subsidy is separated from the kind of operator fee each month. I mean, people do, and effectively what they're doing is, you know, paying on a monthly plan, bit by bit. I mean, the thing is, you know, I think a lot of people listening to this will go, oh, I don't mind paying for an iPhone 7 or a Galaxy Note. And, you know, actually, given it is the tool that connects us to the digital world, and for almost everybody now, it's become their primary kind of digital device. And I hesitate to say primary computer because still a lot of us are using laptops and desktops. But, you know, seeing increasingly what I'd call mobile-only usage and, you know, things like banking, which people would have traditionally done, you know, exclusively on desktops, a lot of people now are saying, okay, I'm only doing that through my smartphone. Now, there are exceptions to that, and I recognize the audience listening to this is probably perhaps a bit more computer-centric. But the observation I see, you know, kind of in a work-life situation, some of the things we're talking about, is that this predominance of mobile is becoming more and more apparent. And actually, in one sense, in the UK, the US were probably a bit behind some of the rest of the world in that sense. But the point I wanted to make here, while, you know, yes, a lot of us are going to go, yes, I want to have the very best. And actually, I think it's, I mean, to your point, yes, there's a little bit of a spec edge, but it also becomes, to a certain extent, a fashion statement as well. And these are very personal devices. And it seems an anathema to talk about that when, you know, we're so focused around kind of the technology. But I absolutely acknowledge now there is a prestige or status or fashion element to buying a phone. And people really think about that very carefully because it's almost a personal expression of who they are. And of course, that can apply just as much to some of these mid-tier phones where people make a brand choice because, you know, they want to be seen as someone who's an early adopter or an innovator, which I think someone like Xiaomi, for example, has actually played well on, but probably the most successful in that kind of sense has been OnePlus. And we all know that, you know, a lot of the components come out of the same place, and depending on when you buy the phone, you might get something that's the first to have a particular thing, but very shortly afterwards there'll be other devices with that available. And actually, my observation, you know, working in a tech heavy industry, you know, there are less people buying a flagship. So they absolutely still exist, but more and more people now ask me, oh, what's, you know, the OnePlus like, or what about this mid-tier device? Because there is a keenness to kind of get value for money, and that the assertion that we're making that you can get 99% of the functionality, I think, has become a bit more widespread purely through word of mouth and evidence of that. But it does interest me that there are still people wanting to pay that premium. I'm sure, you know, those prices for the iPhone 8 sound crazy. The Note has always been kind of a premium device and had an extra cost associated with it. But, you know, we've spent so long with flagships being around the £500 mark. In the UK, we kind of had exchange rate, meaning that's been pushed up a bit. But it feels like there is now going to be a kind of super premium level that's emerging, not just being a one-off, but actually being a fairly standard thing, which would be interesting to see how people react to that. And I mean, as I say, given that it's a device you probably use more than anything else and is always with you and is so central to the way some of us live our lives, actually it's kind of, I can see why people justify that. But at the same time, I think it's important to realize when you're thinking about this, and you know, this is important for people who are building tools and services that you'll be used by these devices, that there is a cutting edge, but now the whole market, you know, because smartphones in countries like the UK now have nearly every adult has one, or certainly at 80% penetration rates, there's a great kind of fracturing of from the low end to the high end, some people keeping their phone 3 years, you know, some people not installing all the latest app updates. You know, as a service provider, you really have to think about that very carefully, because of course you want to capture as many customers as possible, but you want to do it in a way that's, you know, cost effective. And it just means sometimes there can be diminishing return for supporting kind of more legacy users or something on doing something a bit different, which incidentally is, I think, why you know, Apple tends to be so well supported, because there's just fewer variants to support, if you like, versus Android, despite the fact that Android is slowly becoming more dominant in the market in just in sheer volume terms. But that's a kind of probably a debate to have for another time.
Yeah, just thinking about those all the handsets we've mentioning, starting with that Idle 4 Pro and running Windows 10 Mobile, but also those Android phones, Honor 9, etc., Axon 7, they've all got a similar premium, and I've used premium in quotes, because metal glass design, they've got biometrics, they've got a really smooth finish, and it reminds me really kind of the Lumia 650, Rafe, going back to Windows 10 Mobile. It launched about 3 months after the 950, 950 XL, but seemed like a year on in terms of design. Now, I can put my 950 next to the 650, and the 650 feels by far the more premium device. We've said this before. Even though it costs, RRP is under half the price, now you can get a 950 for not that much more than £200 if you look around. It's still, that 650 is still a really premium design, and I can't wait to get this. Idle 4 Pro seems to have a better build, a better feel in the hand, more premium materials even than the 650, and yet it will match and best the 950 in some areas. And I would have to emphasize that some areas, because of course we have so many imaging fans here, and I'm one of the biggest, and we have to admit that however good the Idle 4 Pro's camera is, it's still not going to get close to the 950. And before you leap in, Rafe, I wanted to slinkly link to another comparison I've done on the site, because I've been putting the 950 XL up against that Honor 9 I mentioned just now, which is a pretty good example of a cutting edge 2017 Android smartphone in the higher mid-range. I mean, Honor would say it's an absolute flagship. Maybe a higher mid-range is a better way of putting it. But it's got twin cameras, one of which is 20 megapixels. It claims hybrid zoom. So you've got, in a sense, pretty similar specs on paper to the Lumia 950, 950 XL, even to the 930 and the 1520 before it. With the kind of, if you set your resolution on the Honor 9's camera to 9 megapixels, you've essentially got pure view zoom and some degree of oversampling at the lower resolution. So I was really expecting this to be quite a close race, but as ever, the 950, all comes down, Rafe. I keep coming back to the combination of factors, the Zeiss optics, the mature fifth generation OIS, the slightly larger sensor, the more mature image processing. They all sound like I'm just trying to pluck reasons from the air, but if you put them all together, the results are evident on the page, and hopefully by moving your mouse around our comparator on the page, you can see for yourself just how well the 950 did yet again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you go through this view, I mean, actually, as you say, it's kind of not that close where on paper you might expect it to be. And it's probably a point worth making about these kind of upper mid-tier devices is, you know, you do lose out a little bit on some of the, and it's kind of the 5% we're talking about, because it is worth saying here, I mean, most of these images that you're doing the comparison on, you've actually zoomed in to be able to see the kind of detail and the difference that we typically talk about here. But actually, it's quite stark in this case. If, you know, you use the comparison tool to sort of go back and forth, it's kind of fairly obvious that the Lumia device is doing better here. And it's a lot of it's about the detail, but also about the kind of accuracy of the color. And as you say, you know, it's the combination of those things in a very mature imaging stack that seems to make the difference. And to me, it's kind of fascinating in one sense that despite being quite a bit of time on now, the 950, and even holding the 950 up to other flagship devices, it's continued to do very well, which suggests to me, in a sense, we've seen a bit of a plateauing of kind of camera technology. Where I think sort of others have been able to catch up a bit is there's been more work done on the processing side. And actually, as we've said many times before, that's somewhat subjective anyway. And we're sort of seeing kind of everyone kind of move towards a more central ground, agreeing what processing looks good. You know, go back a few years and Nokia with its kind of quite neutral or natural processing was quite starkly different to Samsung that was oversaturated. And everyone's kind of moved into a middle ground, I guess, as consumer preferences are being kind of more readily expressed, or, you know, maybe it is just a facet of overall standardization. But I mean, for example, the picture of the black currants in this comparison, you know, you're only going to see that detail by kind of cropping in. But, you know, it's very clear for anyone who knows what a blackcurrant should look like that the 950 captures it much more accurately. And actually, a lot of that is just down to the processing, getting that color accuracy right and, you know, not doing over sharpening. And, you know, actually, the 950, as we've said before, isn't necessarily the very best in our opinion, because it moved more towards that extra processing ground from the more neutral stuff that Nokia had done in the past. But so that's probably a popular thing. But yeah, I mean, as we continue to do these comparisons, I mean, would you agree, Steve, there's been a kind of a plateauing of camera tech in the last 2 years, and we're kind of waiting for something to come along and impress us? And, you know, various things have been tried. I mean, Huawei themselves have kind of done stuff with Leica and kind of having dual cameras and all that. But none of it has really set the world on fire. At best, there's been iterative improvements. And I think that's, you know, Samsung has done the same thing. If I was going to pull out one thing, it might be the dual cameras on the iPhone and allowing some of the portrait photography that you get on the plus size devices. But, you know, that's, and I think that's going to get more interesting once Apple start using kind of the depth sensing and the processing more in the future. I think actually, ironically, it's going to have less of an impact for kind of capturing images and more for sort of doing stuff with augmented reality and being able to sort of do better plane sensing and depth perception, which becomes important for when you're using something like ARKit. But the very fact we're talking about that kind of thing, you know, actually cameras not being used to capture photos, but instead being used for augmented reality or for kind of computer vision to recognize things in front of us, it feels like that's actually probably the forefront of where camera goes first and camera goes next. And that's, if you like, a sensor-first approach, which is really interesting because actually that's a new ground for smartphones to kind of think about a little bit. And all I mean by that is, you know, we've had location smartphones for ages, and that's been a great use of context. But the ability for a smartphone to look through its camera and understand what it's looking at and then potentially place objects in it, which is what augmented reality becomes so important for. You know, the fact that that's the thing that excites me most rather than some imaging innovation that I expect to see in the next, you know, year or so, I think is quite telling.
Yes, and certainly in terms of getting a single shot perfect with a single lens, then I think the Lumia 950 still reigns supreme. And that's borne out, of course, by my one-to-one crops in these articles. But I absolutely recognise that you've got devices with multiple exposures. The Honor 9 does this, but not very well. The HTC U11 does that brilliantly, as does the Google Pixel, where they're literally taking multiple exposures every time and using them, aligning them, reducing noise, and improving the colour accuracy. You've got, as you say, the iPhone 7 Plus using a second camera with a telescopic, not telescopic literally, but an optical zoom. And you've got others like the G5, G6 with the wide-angle second as a second lens. So between multiple exposures and optical zoom and wide-angle, you've got a tremendous range of possibilities. You add in AR, as you just mentioned then, and clearly there's a huge world of smartphone photography beyond what the traditional smartphone, the traditional Nokia 808, 1020, Lumia 950 can do. That can take a fabulous photo with all conditions as is, but once you start wanting to go beyond, then you are looking to these futuristic techniques. And I completely understand people saying, well, my iPhone 7 Plus camera can do an awful lot more than your Lumia 950. I'm sure it can, and the 7 Plus has got a very, very good camera. But if you just want to take a single photograph of a beautiful landscape or a person standing there, or even your dog or whatever, then the 950 will nail it better at the pixel level than anything else. But I do recognise it's something from 2015 and that the world is moving on and the horizons are opening up.
Yeah, I guess it's fair to say that kind of the goalposts are moving. The fact that it's taken kind of 2 years for that to happen, I think, is noteworthy, because before we were definitely seeing kind of year-on-year improvements.
Yeah.
And as you say, that it's interesting. You mentioned the HTC U11 there. Actually, it feels like that's one of the flagships that has managed to stand out, not just for camera, and actually given HTC's history there, I think they deserve a lot of credit for kind of persevering and continuing to try and push things there. But actually, just from a kind of design and materials point of view, HTC has always been keen on trying out new things, and it's had various unibody designs and kind of single piece and machine milled and all that, and, you know, along with Nokia and Microsoft, with arguably one of the manufacturers producing quite distinctive devices. And I mean, others have definitely joined them now, but the U11, I think, you know, along with the Pixel and the S8, are probably the pick of the Android flagships at the moment, and that's pretty impressive. And the U11 actually is one of those ones where you feel like you're paying a premium and you're getting something for it. And I'm not sure, it's kind of a combination of factors, isn't it? It's no one thing about that, but good camera, good materials, kind of interesting design, and you can actually clearly see where the extra money has gone to. Whereas sometimes you can't, and I think the 950 and 950 XL were particularly guilty of this. Despite the fact I've talked about them being completely commoditized, we can still find things to talk about and the differences between these high-end flagships.
Yeah. The U11 is interesting. I don't want to divert this into being an Android podcast, but HTC, I think, rather messed up the audio, and that's debatable, but that's my opinion. I think they also overdid the gloss, and it's really outrageously blinged out to the point where you'd feel terrified at walking down the street with it in case someone mugged you. But the camera, it was excellent. And the reason it's excellent, they've gone down the multiple exposure route that the Pixel did so well, and they've used basically the same techniques, the same kind of hardware, but they've added OIS as well. So you get the hardware stabilization in low light as well as the multiple exposures. Okay. Having said all of that, go and look at the site. I've put links in the show notes. My Lumia 950 against U11, the 950 still came out on top, despite all of which we said that 950 is a classic device. And there's just a final thought on the 950 range, Rafe. Back in the day, when we got the Nokia 808 PureView, we said to ourselves, with hand on heart, we're lucky to get this, because we thought Symbian was done. We thought Nokia wasn't going to release any more hardware. We've got it. They've got it out the door. We can buy it. We can appreciate it. And it was great. The 1020, again, for its day, we thought, whoa, we thought that was the end of the PureView line, these 41 megapixel sensor cameras. But they've got another one out, and it runs Windows Phone. And the world was happy because it finally slipped out the door. These could so easily have been cancelled. The 950 and 950 XL, I would argue, is the last of the sort of Nokia designs. They could so easily, again, have been cancelled last minute, but they shipped. They shipped them. Admittedly, they had plastic backs, and you had to buy Mozo leather and wooden backs to make them seem at all interesting. But they shipped, and we do have them, which is why we're now using them today, and I can use them in my comparisons. Each of these devices, 808, 10, 20, 9, 50, I'm arguing, Rafe, we were lucky to get them, and we should appreciate them for what they are, despite their obvious faults.
You won't get any argument from me on that front.
Talking earlier about the Elite X3, I didn't note on the site that if you play your cards right before the end of July, you can get one now for £400, including VAT, which, considering it was something like £700, including VAT, beforehand, and it will presumably go back up to something similar to that after the 1st of August. Basically, HP has reduced it on its site to £550, but they've got a cashback offer. If you're prepared to wait for a few weeks for the cash to flow back into your account, for another £150. So you get an Elite X3, top of the range Windows 10 mobile phone with the desk dock, HP's dock, for £400 all in. I reckon that's something of a bargain. And if anyone doesn't like the sound of the Idol 4 Pro and rather fancies the larger screen from HP and the tremendous ruggedness, the waterproofing and so forth, I think now is the time to get an X3 in the next week before that price goes up again.
Yeah, I think it's a good deal, this, especially with the cashback saving. And HP do seem to be providing good support for the device as well. The only thing I'd say, you know, if someone's looking to buy a Windows flagship, are they not going to be thinking about what Microsoft might be doing? And we still haven't heard anything concrete on this, apart from there does seem to be sort of momentum, or at least Microsoft still seems to be intending to produce one. You did have a story up on the site.
Yeah, go there.
It's speculating that... it was for a kind of advert for Microsoft Azure, I believe, some tutorial learning program. And you spotted the fact that, you know, there was this kind of device that kind of looked a bit like something come out of a patent. I mean, I thought you were probably pushing things a little bit to assume it was a Surface. But nonetheless, it's kind of interesting that to speculate this was a device that kind of folded in half, and could that be two screens or kind of a keyboard attached to it? And Steve, you've been very fond of talking about kind of the Surface device perhaps being kind of a small size tablet stroke phone. And yeah, it's clearly from this. I mean, I don't think this is the mythical Surface phone or even a Surface device. I think it's probably more likely to be, you know, some kind of concept that's just helpfully been used in this. I mean, it might even be an existing device. The photograph isn't really clear enough for us to be able to recognize it. But it gives us an opportunity to kind of speculate and go, still think we'll see something from Microsoft. So, you know, I think there isn't anything definite. So if people want a new flagship, yeah, Alcatel or HP Elite X3 give you some good options. But, I mean, do you want to speculate at all more than you did in the article, Steve?
Well, the interesting thing is, having looked at the patents, we're showing a tablet that folds in half and then that becomes roughly a 6-inch phablet. That seemed very sensible. Then somebody pointed out that the folded over back half of the concept device pictured, or the prototype device pictured, the back half looks as if it's got an indentation at the top. And have a look at the top left of that photo, Rafe. And does that not look to you partly like maybe the indentations between keys? And could the whole bottom half that's folded round actually be a full-size or near full-size sort of a QWERTY keyboard? Could it be like a sort of, imagine a sort of Nokia E90 Nokia communicator, but for the 2017 era or 2018 era, with a six and a half inch bezel-less front display and a full QWERTY keyboard that folds under when you don't need it? Is that possible, or am I clutching at straws?
Well, I think judging by your level of optimism, I've definitely said you had your Weetabix this morning. Yeah, it absolutely could be, or it could be kind of a fold-up stand case or something like that. I mean, I think someone in the comments mentioned that it looked a bit like their kind of courier device, which I think many of us kind of lusted after that Microsoft produced, which was kind of a tablet crossed with a kind of notebook. And I mean notebook in the kind of the paper sense, and kind of fold in half. And yeah, I think many of us would love to see some hardware innovation around that. I mean, you know, if you think of some of the tablets that have been out more recently, you know, the high-end on Android or the iPad Pro, and sort of it doesn't feel like there's been much movement there. And you know, it's fun to speculate about these things. I think we should emphasize that we don't actually think this is anything that's going to come out anytime soon. I mean, it's just a bit of stock imagery that's been usefully used. But as I say, in various communications, Microsoft seems to have implied that there is still interest around there. they've talked about Windows 10 Mobile still being active, and there certainly continues to be speculation around that. And the very fact it hasn't been killed off tells me that there's probably something still in the works. And I think your speculation around maybe a kind of smaller tablet or a transformer type device, whether that's QWERTY clamshell in the style of something like the E90 or the E7, I think remains to be seen. But it does seem to be the kind of the most logical assumption, and that I would like to think they can break new ground and produce something that kind of stands out by having something new. I mean, while the most recent Surface laptop is kind of just a laptop and a bit boring, all the previous Surface devices, whether you talk about, you know, the Surface Pro or the Studio or, you know, any of those other devices, have actually kind of had something new in them, be it a clever hinge or a transformer or clip-on keyboard. So hurry up, Microsoft, produce something that makes us go, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at the image itself, it does kind of seem like it's something an artist has dreamed up. But at the same time, it just has that hint of reality that had me. You can see why I leapt on it. And
I can.
And the question is it a prototype? Is it a one of these bits of hardware they throw around internally to see which form factors work? In other words, is it literally a concept knocked up in a 3D printer and then somebody, an artist, has slapped a photoshopped image on the front? We just don't know. Whatever it is, the important thing to realize is that whatever it is, it will come out in 2018 and beyond. So we're not looking at this year. And you mentioned there that the Windows 10 Mobile is not going away. I mean, Joe Belfiore, when he was interviewed a week and a half ago, he said, you know, Windows 10 on ARM is for this category of device and portable PCs and so forth. For phones, we have Windows 10 Mobile. He didn't say we had Windows 10 Mobile in the past. He says we have. And I did another story on the site, which if you look at, bring up the story marked Windows 10 Mobile and the future towards autumn 2018. And I wanted to just extend a previous chart I'd done in the past, Rafe, in showing that which bits of Windows 10 Mobile are going to carry on, which are common with the wider Windows 10 world. So, for example, going into autumn 2017, which I guess is 2 or 3 months away, we've got the one core is still being developed. The feature 2 branch, we've got a new build today as we record this, actually with a new feature. It actually supports a new continuum mode, which is interesting. All the UWP applications, of course, will carry on basically for ad infinitum, certainly beyond the end of 2018. The universal app platform, which is all the drivers, Windows Update, the Edge rendering engine, the store, app servicing Cortana, all of that stuff, that's all common to Windows 10 Mobile. I do expect that to drop away at some point in 2018 when Windows 10 on ARM comes on Steam for real. So if you look at the chart, Rafe, I still think Windows 10 Mobile has got certainly a couple of years left in it in terms of the people who are on current hardware, 950 and so forth, even people on the 930, 1520, people who have been with us. Let's face it, these are 2 to 3 year old devices. On the release preview ring of Windows 10 Mobile Creators Update, I think they've still got at least another year of active, useful, supported, updated life, if not more. And certainly this Idol 4 Pro, if I do end up not returning and keeping this £420 smartphone, I jolly well hope they stick to the usual mantra in the mobile world of 2 years of active support. And judging from my chart, okay, by the end of by the spring or summer 2019, I may only be still getting security updates, not actually feature updates and fixes, but I think there's still life in this old dog yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's always difficult to speculate about the future, and Microsoft does have this 2-year commitment, but as you kind of hinted at there, it can mean many different things. It can just mean security updates. But clearly, you know, there is a much longer term plan for the architecture of Windows. And I mean, this is where it's worth bearing in mind that Windows will extend beyond just kind of desktop and mobile. We're kind of already seeing that happen with Xbox. But if you think about HoloLens and the efforts that have been made to run Windows even on IoT devices, and you know, we've seen that with kind of recent developments around the Raspberry Pi, some of those other kind of devices as well, I think that will continue. I mean, you know, Windows continues to be very much at the heart of what Microsoft is doing, and just because it missed out on mobile in a big way, there's actually, you know, potentially other things coming down the road. I mean, AR is probably the most obvious and interesting of those. And so I think the idea around one core and the universal kind of app platform and, you know, obviously UWP most importantly, means that, you know, the ability for Microsoft to continue to support Windows 10 Mobile and indeed have updates going on to it and the latest version of the application will absolutely continue. But as you point out, kind of the thing that's not changed but I think probably worth highlighting is that the kind of the Windows 10, the desktop specific parts, you know, are, as that kind of unity of Windows 10 happened, there is an appreciation that there needs to be keep things moving and some things that only work on certain form factors of devices. It's going to be a hard thing to kind of judge in the future going forward. I mean, at the moment it's kind of easy because of course you're going to put priority onto desktop things and there will be a lot of things that are very recognizably desktop only. As we go forward, that might be a harder call to make. But actually, I think, as you rightly say, the good news for, you know, those who are interested in Windows on other form factors, and I include mobile in that, there is a quite strongly identified common core. And that means that, but because that's at the heart of the Microsoft architecture and strategy for Windows as a platform, it means the ability to do Windows 10 Mobile. I would imagine it's still a, you know, a very big engineering effort, but relative to having two very separate platforms, and especially with what I'm talking about here, Windows not fragmenting but being available in lots of different solutions and interface types, that's actually kind of a good thing for the mobile users amongst us, simply because it kind of enables Microsoft to continue doing that without it being a really big anchor drag. And as you said, they've kind of identified the way to stop that happening too much by having these components that are specific to one particular solution. And when I talk about, so I mean desktop and things like that, you know, I'd encourage people, go and have a look at Steve's diagram, because it actually makes it a lot clearer than me waffling on about it. It's interesting though, isn't it, Steve, that really an awful lot of that now is driven by the UWP application platform. And I think, although that isn't maybe fully appreciated by everyone, because Microsoft is so still desktop dominant, and you know, it isn't a player in mobile in the same way that it's kind of Apple and Android are, and I think we all have to say that kind of Microsoft missed or lost on mobile. Those UWP apps really do mean you can have a very strong experience in terms of some of the very core activities that you expect to do in computing and digital in general, be that on a mobile phone, on a kind of set-top box, or indeed going forward on future devices. And now I've had a chance to use HoloLens, and it's kind of weird using some of those universal Windows apps within that as well, that you're then recognizing that I'm using on the Surface Pro and then on a Lumia 950, and indeed, you know, other people have got Xboxes and are able to run those applications as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still, I mean, I haven't got access to HoloLens, obviously, but it still boggles my mind, really, when I pick up my Surface Pro and I mean, perhaps detach the keyboard, and all of a sudden it's not running a Windows 10 desktop. It looks pretty darn similar to Windows 10 Mobile in many ways. You run up almost any of those UWP apps on the Surface Pro with the keyboard detached, and you might as well be using a very large Lumia 950 in some ways. And to have that commonality that you think, I know how to use this application, it looks exactly the same as on my phone, or vice versa. I just think that that's really elegant. When I go, for example, from my Android phone to my Mac, or to my Windows desktop to an iPhone, all of these things, they're totally different interfaces, totally. And I know the services work together, and I know none of them are terribly onerous to use, but to have that commonality of interface between phone and tablet and desktop and laptop and HoloLens and Xbox and whatever, I still believe that is an elegant vision, and that's one worth supporting.
It is. I mean, the one thing I will say with this, and this was the same quote that you mentioned from Joe Belfiore in the same article, he did talk about the challenge of getting onto ARM, particularly when we talk about system-on-chip devices, which include phones, but basically pretty much all ARM. It means and it's quite right to say, you have to target it more closely. And it's kind of what alluded to earlier in the podcast about kind of hardware-software integration. You know, it's one of the, I would say, challenges that you get with ARM, that, you know, all the benefits that people talk about for ARM, and that's mainly around the energy budget, does come at something of a price. And so it means that Microsoft is having to make an effort to target these devices. And obviously phones are one of those, and actually it's multiple families within phones. And then obviously, you know, the set-top boxes, HoloLens, and everything else as well. So, it, you know, although we talk about one window, that doesn't come for free. And the only reason that's interesting, it does mean some of the updates will, in theory, become a bit slower to these other devices. But again, I'll refer back to that's why the UWP apps are interesting, because
exactly,
there's effectively an abstraction layer there that enables that kind of universal app. But it perhaps means some of the core features of the system and, you know, APIs. And it's kind of a little bit like we used to have in the mobile world, where, you know, all the cross-platform tools, the things like PhoneGap, weren't maybe right on the cutting edge with some of the APIs, but there is still that fundamental core that is shared. And Microsoft has got so much further with that vision than any of the other platforms. You know, Android has tried to do it, Apple is certainly moving Mac OS and iOS close together, and it has tvOS. And while there is a shared common OS there, isn't quite as common the application stack. And actually, as I've said many times, I don't think Microsoft necessarily gets the credit it deserves there, mainly because it's just not shipping the devices that mean people recognize that.
Yeah. And staying with the, we mentioned chips there and ARM processors and so forth, I wanted to just finish with another of my famous charts, or infamous charts, looking at the benchmarking the Snapdragon generations that are used in Windows on phones. Now, the processors I've shown in the chart, Rafe, are not an exhaustive list of all the different mobile processors, but they're the ones actually used in Windows phones or Windows 10 mobile devices. And I've tried to put representative example devices on top of each bar. And I wanted to put into context was where the new Idol 4 Pro sat in terms of, say, someone who had a Lumia 950 XL. Would it be worth them upgrading? I use that upgrading in quotes because of the imaging angle I mentioned earlier. But would it be worth them, quote, upgrading to get a faster, smoother experience? And according to my chart, we're looking at about a 30% increase in raw speed, raw power, going up to that Snapdragon 820 with the slightly more RAM. I think that and that is significant, but my contention in the article and my conclusion was that because Windows 10 Mobile, like Windows Phone before it, is kind of largely the transitions and the elements of the interface largely smooth out underlying chipset differences. I don't think the Idol 4 Pro, just as the X3 before it wasn't, it's not dramatically faster than the 950 XL. It is faster, it is measurably faster, but it's not transformational. I still don't think the Idol 4 Pro is necessarily a surefire upgrade in terms of performance from the 950 XL, even though the benchmarks might, you know, give it 30-40% more.
Yeah, I agree. I think you have to go back to the 930 or something like that to kind of justify a performance upgrade.
Yeah.
A lot of that's down to the fact that basically the phones don't run at 100%. So although there is this theoretical 30% difference, the number of times that you actually push the phone that hard is probably pretty limited. Now, it's going to depend on what you're doing. And actually, because of the whole nature of the app situation on Windows, actually, I think there's relatively few times that will happen. And it's sort of some of the more computationally intensive tasks, which tend to be things around VR and things like that. So actually, maybe if you end up using your Idol 4 Pro to kind of do VR, then maybe you'll start to see the difference. But I just don't think there's a big enough difference there to justify. I mean, on paper, as you say, it's about 20-30%. But I would argue that, you know, for 95% of phone tasks, you just won't see it. And as you say, you know, Windows as a platform has actually always been very good at smoothing out those differences. When do you see it? Sometimes in processing images, but there's kind of an asterisk next to that for the Idol 4 Pro versus the 950 in particular. So I've kind of mentioned VR or games and things like that. As I said, I just don't think it's a big enough difference. I mean, I've always been somewhat skeptical about phone benchmarks anyway. I mean, there's been plenty of controversy recently with various companies faking benchmarks or optimizing, a bit like the car manufacturers were doing, I guess. I mean, that's an old story as well. I can remember that happening several times over the past decade. But also, you know, the benchmarks are very much kind of theoretical processing power and don't necessarily reflect real world benchmarks. And what reminds me very strongly of this is some of the low-end Lumia devices, which actually had, you know, remarkable performance for their spec in many ways. You know, when I'm talking about things like the 520 versus the 920, which there was, you know, a factor of two difference, yet you didn't really reflect that in most day-to-day activities. And we talked then about actually browsing always being one of the things that you kind of pick that up on, and application startup time. But it's interesting, having compared the 950 versus the Elite X3, actually seeing those differences kind of fade away slightly, just because it's kind of diminishing returns. They're already being pretty quick. Actually adding an extra 30%, you're talking about taking 30% away of a much smaller piece than you know, some of those earlier devices. So it's interesting to see this in theory. And I mean, I guess again, we could kind of mourn the fact there hasn't been more Windows hardware sort of taking advantage of some of the new processors. I mean, the 835 being the classic example. I guess we all hope that the Surface phone would be on something like that, or indeed something even more up to date. I guess it's fair to say that kind of the 808, 810, 820, you know, all relatively speaking within the same generation, and therefore not a massive difference. Interesting article nonetheless.
Yeah, I think I would argue that web browsing is another example where something is computationally and graphically intense. For example, if you've got a QHD screen rendering a desktop class web page with 40 images, that's going to, you will start to really stretch the processor at that point. Although it's worth noting that the Idle 4 Pro we mentioned earlier only has a 1080p screen, kind of by design, I'm imagining, and that will certainly give it a better battery life and also better speed. So the 950 XL is 30% down in terms of raw benchmarking speed on the Idle 4 Pro, but the 950 XL has got to push a lot more pixels with its QHD screen. So maybe the real world benchmarking, it will be a notable difference, and that's one of the things I'll be aiming to test over the next month or so.
Which I guess brings us nicely full circle, Steve, to where we started, that we're sort of trailing Steve's idle review. To say it really depends on when that's all that arrives, but probably sometime in the middle of August or so. And I guess that's probably a good point to leave people with that teaser for the future, a good place to end the podcast this week. So I'm going to say thank you to Steve for all his usual hard work and all the editorials, which has provoked a lot of discussion this week. And, of course, for being the co-host who's always on the other end of the line.
Thank you. And just to mention, the reason we've let this podcast ramble on for a full 50 minutes plus is because we don't get Rafe Blanford every week now. So we want to make the absolute most of him when we do have him. So thank you, Rafe, for coming on. I know you're tired. It's the end of a long day for you, as it is for me. But hopefully this podcast has made sense. And thank you all for listening. All about windowsphone.com. Don't forget to keep get involved in the comments as you usually do. And we'll catch you next week. Bye for now.